Today on Movie Rollers, we're going to discuss the Chris Nolan epic Interstellar. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, trash me.
And yes, do as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And if you couldn't tell by that intro,
I'm really excited to talk about
Interstellar, which is going to be our movie of the week this week, because there is only one movie in this show.
We've only got room for one movie, I think, when it's a Chris Nolan one.
Well, I know. I mean, I'm not. Maybe I don't have. Have pages and pages of notes for this one, but yes, I can see you've got a pretty dense page of typed text there.
Two different media, a typed text and handwritten notes.
Oh my god.
But before we get into Interstellar, Joe, I wanted to reference the wrangle that we had put out a while ago for another movie I'm predicting, where there was contention where you and I loved Whiplash. And Yazdi thought that the man was just mean and cruel and nasty.
So just for our listeners who, you know, if you haven't already gone over to Wrangle, RANGL.com, do head over there. This we're partnering with the great folks over at Wrangle.com, and it's a website where you can go to debate and argue and discuss and generally...
Give your opinion on things.
On all manner of things, not just movie-related.
Correct. But we are in the pop culture section. So the question that we had put up was, should teachers or coaches go beyond extremes to get the very best out of their students? And remember, this is the podcast, if you haven't heard it, the episode where Yazdi had an allergic reaction to J.K. Simmons' character, who was jazz musician.
Right. I just had an issue with the movie in its own way, defending bullying.
Yeah, just ever so slightly. I don't think I've ever seen you react that way to something, Yazdi.
Maybe it was all those years of bullying which caught up with me.
Yeah,
like, enough with this.
You were a bully, huh?
Yes, I was. I used to beat up people who were scrawnier than I am.
Oh.
No, I did not.
I'm telling you, we're going to have to bring the couch out next episode. So basically, 79% agreed with the fact that coaches do need to push their students. So 79% agreed with that, and 21% again were against it. But there were some very interesting comments, both about the argument and the movie as well. So let me just read out a few good ones. So we had Idiot Savant-Garde is the name of the person, if you're listening. I saw this movie last night. So again, this is the movie Whiplash. The coach was brutal. I loved him. Keep it up, JK.
I see why that's a good comment, Rashmi.
Right. Someone called NH Rag. No, bullying and intimidation is never appropriate.
Go.
The movie from Jules. The movie is really good, but the coach made me uncomfortable with his choices. Acting fantastic.
Agree with Jules.
And then I like this one. Killer Kevin. Interesting name. Hopefully not a bully. He needs a can of whoop-ass.
Who does? The coach does?
But then someone called Abernathy wrote, the only teachers I've ever valued are the ones that pushed me to the point where I kind of feared them.
So yeah, that was the point I was making.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. That I'm fine with.
You just don't believe that they should push you to suicidality, which is...
Correct, or you should abuse
this character
them.
Did. Right. That I think we all agree on.
Yes.
Cool. Well,
RANG... And if you want to see more, if you want to see more of the comments, go over to RANGL.com.
Yeah, and thanks again to the great guys over at Wrangle.com. We've been working with them for a while, and I see that there's been a little bit of traction there on the Wrangle side of things. So if you haven't been there, head over to Wrangle.com. They have an app, they have a website. It's really great stuff. We thank them for their support of Movie Wallers.
Yep. And they've actually put up another Wrangle about Birdman, which was one of our podcasts that we did recently, which is, so again, this one's open now. And if you want to come and debate with us, Birdman, was it all in his head or did he really fly? So we'll give some feedback on that one during our next podcast.
Yeah, and I think we should put one up too about whether people generally agree if it's one of the best movies of the year or if it's just a pretentious gimmick.
I don't think we can hold off Joe speaking about Interstellar any longer, Yazdi.
Okay, let's
jump into Joe is literally like ushering us along. Go for it, Joe.
Well,
we even gave you the intro on this one.
Yeah, maybe somebody else should do that, because I'm going to be talking, doing a lot of talking here. So, Yasli, why don't you tell us the bit about Interstellar?
Certainly. So Interstellar is the latest movie from Christopher Nolan, who famously writes movies along with his brother, Jonathan Nolan, and following on the footsteps of many, many movies which have been wildly celebrated, including most recently Inception and the Batman series. Here is Nolan's latest movie, Interstellar. Interstellar speaks of a title character named Cooper, who is a farmer in the not-so-distant future, when essentially the Earth is being terribly under the stress of blight, and there's no food, crops are being decimated, and the Earth has a very real problem of running out of food and people dying on the planet. And into that, within that context, is framed the story of Cooper, who actually, as it turns out, used to be an astronaut. And Cooper is widowed and has a son and a daughter, as well as a father. He lives on a ranch. And Nolan has intentionally not given away too much of the story before the movie was released, and I'll try to do the same. Suffice it to say that due to a series of circumstances, Cooper is actually recruited to indulge in space travel, and off he goes interstellar into other galaxies along with a whole bunch of people, which is pretty much the first half hour of the movie, and then the rest unfolds. The movie is directed by Christopher Nolan, who has also, as I mentioned, co-written the movie. It stars Matthew McConaughey in the Cooper title character. It also has support from Michael Caine, from John Lithgow, from Jessica Stein, from Anne Hathaway, and an uncredited A-list star who pops up in the third act of the movie. Having said that, this movie has been out for a week, and I love it when every once in a while a movie pops up on the film scene, where it just energizes the whole cinema community and people cannot write enough about it. It happened most recently with Gone Girl, and now it's happened with Interstellar, where everybody's been saying about 10,000 things at once about the movie. What do you guys think about it?
Yeah, and interesting that on my Facebook feed, a lot of people kept mentioning they were going to Interstellar, which is interesting to me when things like that happen on Facebook. Okay, here we go. So first off, after this movie finished, I felt exhausted because I really felt like I had been to space. Given we've just seen Gravity win Best Cinematography last year, I think this film had a lot to live up to. But I have to say, hands down, this is one of the best trips into and out of our galaxy, and way better than Gravity, because it actually has a story too. I mean, the cinematography is breathtaking at times. There are many things to really like about this movie, which we can talk about in depth. But that said, if you really think about the story overall, and I actually got to see the movie twice, there are some huge holes in it. And for me, and I think overall not much happens, but I'm sure we're going to be talking about that. I think overall a great experience movie, and certainly way more elevated than Gravity last year, but it has its problems.
Sure.
Go for it. Well, I mean, any Christopher Nolan film is a big event for me. I mean, I've been excited about this movie since last year, I think, when they released the original teaser trailer with Matthew McConaughey driving through the fields to, looking towards the stars. So, yeah, I've been, anticipating this one a lot, and I decided to go into a black hole myself, actually, in the weeks leading up to the movie. If you have an interest in this movie, I would say, probably switch off the podcast now anyway. We're going to try very hard not to give spoilers, but I went in cold. In fact, I refused to watch the last three trailers leading up to the film for fear of plot spoilers, and that included one evening at the movie theater where they were literally playing the trailer. I had to kind of, cup my hands over my ears and bend out. Honestly, it was kind of a fanatical thing for me. So this is an event for me, which means that my review is not necessarily going to be objective, but, Interstellar was just another great movie from Nolan. I don't think it's his best work. I think the movie, like Rashmi said, has some flaws. And I think if you're going to hold it up to a magnifying glass and start picking apart its plot elements, it will unravel somewhat quickly. But in terms of the kind of thing that I like to go to the movies for, this checks all the boxes. Nolan is an incredibly visual director. He understands the nature of imagery. We were lucky enough to see this in the true 70mm IMAX format, which, if you get the chance to see it, I would strongly recommend that you do. And, it lived up to everything that I wanted it to, I think. Again, not his best work, and we'll talk a little bit more about why that is, but I thought this was another hit for Nolan.
Yes, D.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much to say about this movie that I really don't know where to begin, but I'll try to be brief, at least at the outset. I think this is a you know, an ambitious, gorgeous, indulgent, frustrating, glorious mess.
Yes, 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 and yes.
Yeah, I mean, I have tremendous respect for the movie because of its vision. And I've said this many times, give me a flawed, wildly ambitious movie any day over a safe, accomplished one. And this is a wildly, wildly ambitious movie. In fact, it's so ambitious, it cannot help but, you know, not able to meet those ambitions. And I also tremendously admire the movie for the fact that it does not dumb down its science at all. And we can talk about it some more. I mean, this is a film about astrophysics, and there is astrophysics front, right, and center of it.
I'll argue with you about that.
So, you know, I mean, good for them. And so, you know, I admire the movie tremendously for a lot of things. And I actually did consider starting off with a snarky comment, but
I'm sensing a butt at the end of this diatribe here.
But there is so much, there's so much I admire about the movie and I appreciate about the movie that I didn't want to be snarky just for the sake of being so. I will say oddly that overall, the thing which kind of surprised me within the context of everything that I admire and appreciate and respect about the movie is that it left me oddly cold. It was a very emotionally cold, almost a sterile experience for me. I mean, the movie's working, and we can talk about it, the movie's working on two fronts, right? There's a whole science, you know, NASA reaching out into space, time, all that stuff on the one end. And then there's a very other strong beat, which is the emotionality, where, you know, explaining about this father-daughter relationship, did not buy 1 minute of the father-daughter, and it started grating on me. And it's curious you mentioned about Gravity, because I actually had exactly the opposite reaction. When I was watching Gravity, I felt I was in the movie, like I was going through what the Sandra Bullock character was going through. In this movie, as wowed as I was by the visuals, I was very conscious that I'm watching CGI. I didn't believe that I was, you know, crossing across wormholes and going into other galaxies. But we can chat more.
Okay, so let's start with the things I think I thought were good. Sorry, I've got a frog in my throat. I actually love how the view of the future was very realistic. And I think Nolan does that really well. Joe, you always have that word, which I can never remember.
Verisimilitude.
I love that we're looking at a future movie that doesn't have a plethora of futuristic gadgets. In fact, at one stage when the movie starts, I couldn't even tell what time period we were in. It's a very realistic future. And I think when you think about the Earth dying and what this population is going through, the tendency, as we've seen in things like Divergent or The Maze recently, you know, there's a tendency to go dystopic. And I'm really happy that he was very sensible about keeping the future world very, very realistic. And that down to the spaceship itself, the spaceship design, it wasn't glitzy and glamorous. It felt like it could be a real spaceship. And I mean, it kind of reminded me of, we recently saw Danny Boyle's Sunshine, and the way that the ship all fits together. I just love how realistic everything was. That was one of the things I really loved about the movie. And I think, you know, great performance by mostly, I think, well, Matthew McConaughey is always doing a good job these days. I really loved the young Murph, the young character who played his daughter, Mackenzie Foy. Mm-hmm. Just amazing.
Yeah, so there's a lot of points that we've raised
apologies,
here.
Yeah.
It's okay, no, because I think, as he said, you know, this is one that we could literally have a two-hour podcast on. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, to speak to the verisimilitude piece, I mean, I think that's something Nolan does very well. And there's actually a couple of scientific papers that are coming out of the production of Interstellar, because the equations for wormholes, and Kip Norton, I think, is the name of the astrophysicist who's actually credited in this movie. He actually gave a bunch of equations to the CGI folks, and the CGI folks created the wormhole piece of the movie. And that's not a spoiler; that is in parts of the promo stuff for the movie. But they've actually published papers on how realistic that depiction is. And this is the first time that you know, computer graphics artists have actually gone into that. So I agree with you. I think the production design, and Nolan does that very well. I think everything, you know, spaceship design is functional, not stylish. So everything is there because it has to look a certain way, because there's a reason for it to look that way. And I really like that. On the emotional side of things, Yasti, I think in many ways for me, this movie wasn't about space. I mean,
I know.
It's kind of a space movie, but for me, the big theme in there was the father-daughter relationship. And I think more so than the kind of overarching narrative about, you know, the earth is dying, we've got to find a new home for humanity. For me, the film almost resists getting very plotty with that. It kind of focuses more on the fact that, you know, McConaughey has left and his daughter is pining for him. And Mackenzie Foy in that role did such a remarkable job of convincing me. She was the young girl, the daughter of her emotions. And that whole scene just seemed to work really well for me. Granted, it was very early on in the movie, but the impact that had on me emotionally kind of carried its way throughout the entire movie. You know, right to the end, apart from the last 15 minutes, which needs to be forgotten about forever. But, you know, for me, that was the big, you know, I was almost disappointed with the spaceness of it, because I was expecting Interstellar, Chris Nolan, to be a big epic space movie. And I you know, when I came away from the movie initially, I was a little disappointed that I didn't get that. And what's played on my mind in the days since seeing it, and the reason I want to see it again, is that whole, you know, that whole narrative about him and his daughter.
Yeah, but I think I completely agree that it, I want to say, talk about both of the points, but I'll talk about the latter one first. I completely agree that the first 45 minutes of the movie are very compelling, both in terms of its scientific and its emotional beats. And I think a lot of it is at the hands of that actor who plays his daughter, the young
Mackenzie
daughter,
Foy, yeah.
Mackenzie Foy. I mean, she's very, very
remarkable
in terms of that. But then it kind of really peters off, because the rest of the movie is not able to sustain that. And I think maybe I'm being unfair when I'm going to say it, and people can, you know, beat me down and post nasty comments, but Christopher Nolan just is not a good writer. I mean, he suffers from the George Lucas phenomenon, which is that he's a tremendous visionary. He sees things, you know, a good 10, 20 years before people and brings them on the screen. But God, is his dialogue clunky, and he just cannot maintain that. I mean, we can talk about another issue I have with all of Nolan's films, but he's not able to sustain that. You know, once the movie moves out of that frame, then the rest of it tries to keep coming back to that, and the whole ending of the movie is kind of...
It's a disaster.
I know.
I've never said that about a Nolan movie before.
But it is a disaster, because they're trying to make something out of this father-daughter, which it just hasn't earned. And there's that very final scene, which is just, they bring in a new actor for it, and it's just, oh, it's so bad.
I agree. I mean, I think I was hoping that once you see the older Mackenzie Foy, the older Murph, there would still be that emotionality, but it's almost devoid of emotionality. And I thought that father-daughter relationship, I thought that he was actually trying to play that twice. Mm-hmm. Once with the Anne Hathaway, Michael Caine relationship, and then once with the Murph, Matthew McConaughey. But it was very disappointing in that part. I mean, in terms of the story, when I try and distill what happened, I could literally write it in one line. It just felt very, almost too focused. But we're there for 3 hours, right? I mean, it's a long, long film. And maybe we entered the wormhole ourselves. I mean, maybe the density of our planet changed.
We were there for 3 hours.
And too little happened for me to feel like I'm satisfied with the movie as a whole. The experience is phenomenal. And remember, I got to see it twice. So I saw the screening in IMAX, and then I went with Joe, and it was impossible. I hope you realize it was almost impossible for me to have no emotion, despite the fact that you kept asking me and baiting me without realizing it. Which was very difficult. But having seen it twice and having sat through it twice, it gave me an opportunity to kind of test what I had thought about it initially. And it really was devoid of story, I felt.
I mean, I think this
But that doesn't take away from the experience.
No, I mean, this is the irony of it, is that visually, this is one of the greatest cinematic achievements of the year. You know, it really is so splendid to look at. I mean, I'm not giving anything away, but every place that they go as part of their space
yes.
travel is just visually so wondrous, but no, there's no weight to it. It's,
right.
It's just, and this happens and this happens
right.
and that happens.
It's
and
inconsequential.
You're wowed, but that whole middle hour is, I don't know. I mean, it seemed, he's gone on record to say that he consulted with NASA scientists from the beginning, you know, him and his brother, Neil deGrasse Tyson has gone on record saying, you know, how much scientifically correct this movie is. So I give them props for all of that. But at some point, you can't just be hammering science for the sake of science. There has to be a purpose to it. So it just...
But I don't think it does that. I mean, I think, you know, they went to great lengths to get the science right so that the science has a solid feel to it, that it's credible.
Mm-hmm.
But I never felt that this movie was overly sciencey. And I think, and I think they even fell into the trap a little bit of thinking maybe they had gone overly sciencey. And there's a couple of moments of horrible exposition in this movie, you know, like they're heading towards a wormhole and then somebody gets a whiteboard out and some marker pens and says, "This is what a wormhole does." And it's like, that was an atrocious moment. But I think that it was
because it wasn't even successful.
Because it was a lack of confidence about the audience not getting it. I think that to me was kind of almost like a production moment where, you know, the producers are sitting around crossed arms thinking, "No one's going to get this movie, guys. You got to put something in to explain what the hell's going on." And I think that kind of thing was reading it. And there were a couple of moments like that where they had, I think, like you said, you know, gone really deep into the science of it. But because the movie wasn't about that, they felt the need to explain that in a couple of moments, which were a horrible exposition.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing to say, but I think this movie, and I would agree with you, by the way, this is not Nolan's best film by a mile. But I think it's because this movie is in many ways a rehash of everything else he's done before, set in a space context. I mean, you know, the grand visual flourishes, the time sequencing, the time dilation.
That,
I mean, he borrows so heavily from his own Inception.
Exactly.
You know?
The dream within a dream. I was like, what? He couldn't resist.
So at some point, it became to me like he's so obsessed with this concept of time dilation that he was thinking, how can I do it again? And they're like, oh, in space, you know, time moves differently. Let's set our whole movie there. And then kind of build things around it.
I would agree with that.
And it's again, giving it credit where it's due, it's very clever in terms of how it works, but it should have devastated me.
I agree.
You know, emotionally. You were expecting too much.
No, I agree.
Part of the problem
is,
and again, you know,
because the setup, that Act One setup is so strong.
It's so strong.
It's so strong. That you should be devastated from that Act One, and it doesn't pan out.
And I think part of the problem is, in all of Nolan's movies, he just has a problem with good female characters. He's unable to write good female characters. I mean, look at the Marion Cotillard character, you know, in Inception. Or look at, you know, Jessica Chastain in this movie. I mean, she just comes off right from the beginning seeming so shrill and exhausted. And all she has to do is either sob or be angry. And she never felt like a fully realized character to me. And
compared to her earlier self, right?
Which I didn't want to, if you don't want to spoiler territory or whatever, but a lot depends on the Jessica Chastain character, and she's one of our great actors. So I don't think it's her acting. That character just came off like a plot device to me. And
although I have to say Catwoman was a great character.
But again, talk about Anne Hathaway. They could have easily changed this to a male character and not have had to change anything. She just happened to be a woman.
Yeah, I think Anne Hathaway was really short-sold in this movie.
I agree.
She wasn't given much to do, and she didn't really get the chance to do much with what she had. So,
but I was still impressed by her.
Accountable.
Yeah, I mean, I was still impressed by her. I mean, she was very, you know, considering how preposterous things get, you know, as the movie moves along, I think she was the one who I did believe in. You know, her reactions to things were pretty credible.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think the movie's flaw is that it tries to, it almost tries really hard to introduce some sentimentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it tries a little too hard. And I think that's really where its flaws lie, is that, you know, this is basically a very, you know, a science project that they then injected these character stories. And what we got was the character stories that were done against a science background, but it didn't quite hang together in a way that was, yeah, as like you say, emotionally devastating as you would want it to be for an emotional movie, because really I never felt that this movie was about the space, and I think it started off that way and it kind of went off a little during production.
I think the movie also has the misfortune of having exceptionally poor timing. I think Nolan's been working on this for years, and I wish it had come out before Gravity did. It would have had a lot more impact. I mean, maybe subconsciously or otherwise, there were many times where I was thinking, oh, you know, this, it kind of is in the shadow of gravity.
Not at all.
And it's definitely... Nonsense. It's definitely in the shadow... I mean, there were many pieces which
it's going to be compared. Of course, it's going to be compared.
Nonsense.
Against.
But see, the whole purpose of gravity was survival. And I bought that. This, I didn't buy the, what was driving, what was pushing the story forward. I didn't buy it. But even
what,
that...
the end of days.
But even like it's going for this in the very last act, it's going for this almost Titanic kind of resolution, you know, Jack and Rose, you know, kind of thing. And it doesn't work. It worked in Titanic. It didn't work.
And
here.
That's the piece I'm talking about.
Right.
That's the piece that I felt was, you know, injected into this screenplay in order to, you know, to justify the existence of a great space movie. But it ends up overtaking the screenplay and it's not the most effective part of the writing.
And I think, sorry, I was going to say, I mean, any time you talk about time and time travel, and then this isn't a time travel movie per se, any time you talk about time and the rules of time, you can get yourself in a real mess. And this one totally got itself in a mess for me. The rules, it didn't follow the rules. Yeah, it just didn't follow the rules of the world it had created. And so you end up in this...
It follows the universe's rules.
No, but it doesn't.
Not
not when you get to the end. Not when you get to the end.
All right, we'll talk about that after the podcast.
Yeah, but it's very strange. And so I just kept thinking, really?
Yeah.
And I kind of saw it. Like, I kind of saw it. I kind of predicted in my head what was happening. Yeah, I kind of got it. I was like, oh, okay, surely that's what's going to happen. But I didn't know how it would happen, of course.
To give it credit, I didn't see how it was going to happen at all. The very last act, I didn't see that coming at all. So, you know, to their credit. But it should have been.
It should have been better. It should have been better. And I think it was all too convenient that Matthew McConaughey was an ex-NASA astronaut.
Let's not even go
I mean,
there,
it's
right?
like that. It's like the John Wick film. It's like a chance encounter. Sets the whole film up, and again in this movie, a chance happening.
I mean,
leads to the whole movie.
If he's really the world's best, yes,
of course.
What?
Well, no.
But the rules.
Well, except for the fact, I mean, if he was really the world's best pilot in terms of an astronaut, and if he was within driving distance of where whatever was going on. Surely they would have reached out to him. They would, and it's not that the minute he showed up, they'd be like, "Aha, you're the one we've been waiting for. Off you go," you know. I even bought that the issue I had a biggest problem with, and this is why I did not believe that they were in space, is because they seemed remarkably cavalier for everything which was happening to them. I mean, they went through this giant wormhole. They're on the other side of the galaxy, and they seemed to have no physical discomfort. They were walking around, save for a few bloodshot eyes here and there. You know, Matthew McConaughey's eyes were mildly red.
Have you been through a wormhole yesterday?
No, but I would think that you would be a little bit shaken. I would think that you would throw up or some of those things would happen, you know. They all seemed so... And, you know, again, this goes into spoiler territory.
It's a tear in the fabric of time-space continuum. You just pop out the other side. It's not a black hole.
But space travel, just getting even to the black hole. I mean,
but we saw a wormhole, we saw a black hole, we saw another galaxy. We saw a lot of space.
There's another piece where something happens, and one of the crew members is stuck on the spaceship for 22 years. Okay, and the rest of the crew returns. And he's like, oh, there you are. I'd be like, you know, making, you know, braids out of my poop or something. If I was alone in space for 22 years, I would be stark raving insane.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I agree.
Anyway, so it felt like a Disney ride to me, what they were going through.
Like a California adventure ride.
Yeah,
this should be
like
a California adventure.
So didn't
see, that's what I got from Gravity. In fact, I think during our review of Gravity, I think I mentioned specifically it felt more like a fairground ride than a movie experience, because the emotional stuff in that movie didn't work. What did work was the sense of being there in space, and, you know, some terrific, you know, cinematography and graphics. That I didn't get that at all from this movie, and I think I felt, you know, a little disappointed for that reason. So I'm kind of surprised that you have that reaction to it, you know, more so than Gravity.
What about those robots on the ship?
Terrific.
That were very interesting, right? I like the robots, but it was strange to me that
there was just one, right?
No, there were two.
Oh,
and then there was another one.
Charge, I think that's what it was called.
But what was interesting to me is they chose to have it speak in colloquial language.
It's a nod to HAL in 2001.
Right,
and has
of
some,
course.
Oh, my God. This
exactly.
is so heavily influenced
and the score,
by
and the score.
And the whole problem with the docking, you know, there's a lot of things, two different parts about docking. That's completely from 2001,
right.
Space Odyssey.
But the rotational gravity, all of that kind of thing.
But even TARS seem to me like Transformers. Like TARS,
yes.
At some point, it could flip up and do these round things and go underwater. At other times, it could like lift things up. At other times, it was like three blocks of metal.
No, I like that. I like that. I thought that was really imaginative. But I thought it was just really interesting that it sounded like the man down the street.
That was the whole point. You haven't seen 2001 then?
No, I have.
HAL
2001? I know, but even HAL is more...
Great.
Intelligent, yeah. more all-knowing, right? HAL is more like a Wikipedia. This one was like, shall I go make you a cup of tea if you want it, or let me tell you about, you know, and my that, AK-47.
That has explanations with it within the movie, and I think it kind of builds upon the whole concept of something like Siri, which is, you know, Apple's voice recognition system on the iPhone, where they're trying to inject personality into the device so that you have more of a relationship with them. And so I think that's just an extension of that theme. You know, again, I think we've seen a lot of movies where they kind of go to the more cold robotic thing. And I think as any kind of human interface device that we, you know, we interact with now, that personality stuff is really what we relate to. And if you have a robot that's your companion, why wouldn't you set it up that way? Yeah. That's my excuse. I mean, I justify it and rationalize everything in a Nolan film because it just fits with my way of thinking.
Okay, let's talk about the IMAX, LIMAX. You know, is it worth the money?
I saw in IMAX 70mm, full fat, the best possible option, apparently, to see the movie. Yes, Dee?
I saw it in IMAX in San Diego, which is not the real IMAX.
I'm sorry, in IMAX and in LIMAX. So the 35mm IMAX and...
So your best place for Ashmi to kind of compare.
Yeah, so
two.
I think definitely, if it's IMAX versus non-IMAX, definitely IMAX. I think the sound and how crystal clear the screen is and how immersive the IMAX screens are generally, definitely IMAX over anything else. IMAX versus LIMAX, 70mm IMAX was definitely more immersive. But I found myself thinking, other than the space scenes, there were a lot of scenes that were filmed in IMAX, and I didn't understand the rationale for the when there's just talking heads.
Yeah.
And that's in IMAX. I don't think it added much more to the 35mm IMAX experience. So I think if it's
Wait, you haven't seen the 35mm IMAX. You saw the digital IMAX, the LIMAX.
That's right. That's what I saw. So. Yeah. So if I'm thinking, you know, 70mm IMAX over digital IMAX, I don't think there was too much in it, to be honest.
Interesting. Because we saw The Dark Knight Rises twice, and I really enjoyed the 70mm format better. But I saw that second time round, so I was focusing less on the film itself,
right.
And I was enjoying the experience of being there with the 100-foot screen. But interesting that, you know, this movie, to me, I think, deserves to be seen on the biggest possible, loudest possible,
yeah,
most immersive format, because, you know, a lot of this movie is there to be experienced.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, it's you know, Nolan is one of the great living directors right now, like David Fincher is, and like Spielberg is, and like many other directors, but he will never be an Ang Lee. I mean, his movies are always so much about him. You know, all the Nolanisms are in the movie. You know, this visual splendor, this sense of self-importance, this disregard for opening credits, this concept of time dilation, this poorly written female characters. These are all like beats that you see again and again. You know, this need to make things unnecessarily complicated.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's not enough that it's about a astronaut story. No, it has to be about the astronaut who saves all of mankind. I mean, it has to be about all of mankind. Why can't it just be about... And, you know, I actually think Matthew McConaughey was a very poor choice. I wish... Because Matthew McConaughey, maybe intentionally or otherwise, is not able to bring any sense of wit to it. He plays it very straight. And when you have a director who's as self-important as Nolan, and you add him to an actor who's as self-important as Matthew McConaughey, it just comes along. I wish it had somebody like, I don't know, Matt Damon, or somebody who could have brought a little wink to the character. You know, even when things are very dire, it might help for somebody to...
I mean, I read an interview with Nolan specifically where he answered a question on that. And you know, they were going kind of the space cowboy type vibe with this one. So,
I can see
and
that.
I think McConaughey
literally.
But McConaughey brought that to the role. I mean, you know, he's the, you know, the kind of, to quote a line from Top Gun, he's a heck of an intuitive pilot. And that's what the role needed, right? Because, you need somebody who can fly beyond the rules, who can fly. And so that was the choice here. But I agree with you. I think, you know, McConaughey, I won't call him miscast here, but he didn't seem to fit well with the role. It didn't seem to be a very comfortable place for him to be. And considering all the amazing work that he's done in the last 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. You know, I was expecting to be blown away by, mm-hmm. by what he was doing with his character. But it felt very much like a McConaughey strolling around without a smile type thing.
Yeah, that was
I don't think he was. I don't think he was a bad choice. I just think overall the chemistry didn't work between Hathaway and McConaughey, and then the other actors. It didn't gel well together.
Was that even the intent?
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. I mean, you know, but if you're going to spend years in space with someone, you would think that there would be better chemistry. Right. And then how it relates to the end as well, which we won't talk about because that's spoilers. But again, I think the beginning, that first act was so incredible. It yeah. just set us up for a downhill struggle at the end. But anyway, shall we wrap this one up? Are we yes. ready to? Okay. So Yazdi, why don't you go first?
You know, if you want to see a great space travel movie, which is edgy and ahead of its time and stars Matthew McConaughey and is about fathers and daughters, you know where I'm going?
Yeah, totally.
Then you may want to rent Contact, which was made about 20 years ago, which I absolutely love. I think that, and
Contact.
This movie is, a lot of, you know, there have been a few articles about this, but I think, you know, Contact is so much more coherent than this is, and I really believe the father-son, father-daughter relationship in that movie so much more. This one kind of gets jumbled. But again, I think if you're a lover of cinema, if you like, you know, people pushing the boundary of what can be done, if people who are really laboring and trying to do something different, trying to bring science without dumbing things down, I think you owe yourselves to watch this movie. I just wish it wasn't such, as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't such a emotionally disconnected experience for me. Really hated the last 5 minutes of the movie as well. So I give it 7.5 out of 10. Which I'm going to back up to 7 out of 10. But I think people need to go see it.
Joe.
You know, I can't hide the fact that Nolan and I are, you know, very aligned in the way that we think about cinema. And I think, you know, if I was ever a filmmaker, these are the kind of movies that I'd be making, because they have all the ingredients that I think are important to the big cinema spectacle. So I say that as a preface simply because it's not going to be a very objective score. I really enjoyed this movie. I really enjoyed what it was trying to be. I think it had some, you know, horrible moments in terms of writing and exposition. Mm. I'll give you that, Yazdi. It was really, you know, clunky in places. And I think for me, that, you know, as I've mentioned twice already, they start, I think, with a very big space, mm-hmm. epic movie, scientifically accurate, and then they layer in this emotional story, and then they let that emotional story, for me, take over. I mean, yes, you didn't get that, but for me, I think the emotional story seemed to override the whole space stuff, which I wanted there to be front and center. So, you know, it kind of got a little lost in that. And, you know, but that said, I can't wait to see it again, and I do want to see it again in the theater. And, you know, I think it's just a marvelous, you know, big screen spectacle of a film that we just don't seem to get very often these days. No one else seems to be able to do it the way that Nolan does it. So for me, it's a rock solid 8 out of 10. You know, I'm disappointed it's not more than that, but you know, I really, really, really liked Interstellar.
Mm. I mean, in the moment, this is a phenomenal movie in terms of experience and conveying the human spirit, the extent of that human spirit. Spend the extra money and watch it in IMAX. I think it will add to the experience. IMAX over Limax, can't really say that, you know, real IMAX adds too much more. A few holes in the story may distract you if you're looking for them, but overall, I think this is a good movie. I think it's a solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I just want Nolan to have some fun, you know, and I want him to make another movie like The Prestige, You know, he made that movie in between. You know, he gets so bogged down by the weight of what the world expects of him, you know, because he's kind of upping his ante, you know, like what is the, he can't possibly, he has to make grander and bigger and bigger and bigger movies, which, you know, say more about how we live right now. And this whole self-importance, you know, this weight is getting too much for him. I just want him to let somebody else write a movie. I want him to, you know, do a little small fun
movie. Yeah, like
because
maybe
he's capable of doing it. I love The Prestige. That's such
a really
good accomplished, fun little movie. And I want him to kind of, as ridiculous as it sounds, I want him to narrow down on a scale for his next movie and make a smaller, like a happy movie.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. The Prestige is, I think, one of my favorite Nolan movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very good. It's not. I would say not one of my favorites. I mean, you know, for me, it's all about the Inceptions and the Dark Knight stuff. That the Memento movie as well was, I think, very good. But you know, I like the fact that he always, you know, almost these movies are built around some kind of a mechanic, you know. And I say a mechanic rather than a gimmick because I think the movies tend not to be about whatever it is that's happening. It's just they become a very good backdrop for a story, and I think those are the kind of movies that I think he wants to make. And I agree, he's getting very self-important with this whole, you know, use of film versus 3D and his, you know, his eschewing, you know, digital versus, you know, sticking with film. But you know, this movie, I was actually a little disappointed that it wasn't in 3D, because I think you know, having seen Gravity last year and its use of 3D, it's clear to me that you can have great cinematography and great immersion with three dimensions. And Nolan seems to say that the IMAX format is as immersive as that. And I think there are aspects of this movie that, you know, dare I say it, looked a little flat, because we are now used to seeing, you know, 3D objects kind of coming at us, and the opportunity for that with some of the visuals here, you know, there's some spectacular visual moments that I think for the first time I find myself wishing that a movie had gone the 3D route. So
yeah, I mean, especially in the last act, there's a particular place where there's this involution of space, where, you know, space is kind of wrapped around itself, and it I think you would get the full impact of that with 3D. Now, mind you, I'm fine if it's not 3D, but it's interesting how he's so strong in his beliefs, and you know,
well, given that he's such a visual director, I mean, I think 3D for 3D's sake is abhorrent and should be banned and should never be allowed, and I can't stand it. But I think, you know, for a movie like this, especially a space movie where you have that opportunity, why not? I mean, don't stick to your guns. I understand that you think film is the digital reference archive material. I get that, you know, and I get that there is no better format for capturing images right now than film, but use the techniques available to you. I mean, use the technology where it's right, because, you know, who directed Gravity? It's Alfonso Cuarón. You know, he embraced that, and he did such a terrific job.
I mean, do you remember Insomnia? I mean, his second movie, you know, that's
the Al Pacino movie.
Al Pacino, Hilary Swank, Robin Williams was in it. It's such a nice, fully contained, it's not overly ambitious, but it just is.
It delivers.
I think it was the right scale for him, you know, because he was going from Memento before he made, you know, The Dark Knight or any of those. It was that in between where I think he hit the scale just right, and he needs to come back
to that.
Although
that's not one of my favorite movies generally.
Okay.
But anyway.
All right. Well, we've rambled on about Interstellar for 45 minutes. Let us know what you think of the movie. I think there's a great opportunity to comment on our website. We'd love to hear what you think. MailerMovieWallers.com. You can get us there directly, or you know, Facebook with the rest of the Movie Wallers fans on MovieWallers.com/Facebook, and tweet as well, Twitter.com/MovieWallers as well. Yes, until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me, and I'm so glad we can continue talking about this now.
Me as well.
I've been bursting.
Well, I've been dying to tell people things on Facebook, but I haven't been able to.
I know. Anyway, and me.
And me as well.